Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com. Chicago Sports Station.
What do you have against the Marquee Network?
Play ball!
Bruce Levine, 670 The Score baseball analyst.
It is all baseball.
32 years, baseball veteran reporter.
Bruce, I've known you for a number of years now.
Breaking stories faster than a cheetah can run. And as far as I know, cheetahs are speedy.
I went ahead and broke the story on Twitter, and then, of course, had to write a story on the website at 670thescore.com.
Twitter at MLB Bruce Levine.
By the way, I love you in The Wizard of Oz.
Bruce Levine.
Mully and Hall, Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. Bruce Levine is The Score's baseball expert, and he joins us on the Al Pamonte Ford Hotline, Al Pamonte Ford in Melrose Park. Good morning, Bruce.
Morning, Bruce.
Good morning, guys. Very busy weekend over at the Sheridan. I got to see David, and him and I did a nice show together on Saturday, and we talked to a lot of different Cub people over the weekend. I think maybe some Cub fans have a better idea what's going on, even though it wasn't pinpointed by Epstein Hoyer and Mr. Ricketts.
What was your biggest takeaway?
I think that they are in the midst of still trying to make some major trades, something that they can't really allow to get out, but nonetheless that there's two or three deals on the table that could happen depending on one other happening. So in other words, if Bryant is the focal point of a trade down the line here, and that could be, you know, possibly with an Atlanta, a Washington, the Los Angeles Dodgers, then there could be some more things that fall after that. Or if that doesn't happen, they have plan B and C. They wouldn't go directly into it, but you know, when you talk to Epstein and Hoyer throughout the weekend, and they had their own seminar on Saturday, they alluded to the fact that, hey, number one, we're not done. You know, give us some patience, give us some time to, you know, that it's a long time till opening day. So that's the number one thing I took out of it, that the team you're looking at as a 25-man roster right now is not the team that they assume they'll be taking into the regular season on March 26th.
Bruce, it was good to see you, and I enjoyed our conversation with Tom Ricketts after hearing what he had to say and the questions that we asked him. Do you think signing Nick Castellanos, who is still unsigned and kind of raising more eyebrows the longer he goes unsigned, do you think that's still a possibility for the Cubs?
You know, I think ideally they'd like to sign him. I don't know if it fits with what they want to do, because Hayward playing center field is just not, it's not the ideal situation. He's a Gold Glove caliber right fielder. He's not in center field. So you weaken two positions at once. You bring the bat in, and certainly it was a very potent back in Castellanos, and the energy he brought was essential to them doing a lot of things. But nonetheless, with Castellanos in right, who doesn't really go to his left all that well, and Schwarber in left that does as well as he can, you need an ass-kicking center fielder who can cover from point to point, gap to gap. I just don't think they feel Hayward is that. So in order to improve their team, defense is going to be a part of it, and I just don't know if Castellanos fits that role.
And that's fascinating, especially with Schwarber, right? So you really have to sort of have that player you describe if you're going to have those two guys on either side.
Right. Now, if Schwarber's moved, you know, all bets are off. Then, you know, Castellanos can be your left fielder. You bring in a center fielder like an Inciarte from Atlanta. If you make a deal that brings back four players for Bryant, you get a young third baseman. You get a center fielder who's been a Gold Glover. That changes the whole dynamic. So that's what Epstein and Hoyer were talking about most of the weekend, about having some patience, and some of these things that right now are not a reality could be.
You know, Bruce, I also enjoyed our conversation with Tommy Hotovy. We asked him who the fifth starter would be. He certainly didn't hesitate when he said Tyler Chatwood. A tougher question might be, who's the ace? And I have to say this. Yu Darvish talked like an ace. He seemed like a guy who was in – we analyzed so much of him in terms of from his psyche to his confidence and everything that he says. He sounded like a guy in the wake of this cheating scandal with the Astros and the Red Sox that was going to be reporting to camp as confident as ever.
I agree with you, David, and he has to be the ace because I don't think that John Lester, all the guts that he has and the professionalism that he brings out there, I don't think his stuff is good enough to be an ace anymore. He's going into his last year of his contract. They have a huge option on him. That's probably not going to happen. So I think that Darvish has to stand up, and I think Hendricks has to be the number two. He had a good year last year. It wasn't a great year, but it was a good year. So I think that has to be the case. I also think that if they do make some moves, that they bring in a big arm that's going to fit into the rotation. So, again, that's pie in the sky right now. But, I believe, like you do, that Darvish has to be the number one, Hendricks two. You have Quintana, who's also a free agent after 2020. Along with Lester, they can have good years for sure, but you have to be moving toward the future, and I think the front office is looking that way right now.
Bruce, the one of the big stories that struck on Friday was not related to the Cubs; it was related to the White Sox. Jack McDowell coming out and saying that Tony La Russa had a methodology of stealing signs of at the old Comiskey. They would. Was it the Gatorade sign that would light up, whatever? Right. What do you know about that? What did you think of that?
Well, I did know that the White Sox, probably were among a group of 30 teams that did the same thing. They try to get advantage as much as they can. It's interesting that McDowell would out the manager who was there before him. He never played for Tony La Russa. Mm-hmm. He wouldn't talk about his own managers that he played for, that they were a part of this. He didn't say whether or not they stopped doing it or not, or how long they did it for. So I find it interesting. I take Jack McDowell at his word. I believe that a lot of teams had one-upmanship and that they did this. I don't think anybody had any technical ability in their dugouts like the Astros had and like the Red Sox had, but... this is not a surprise to me, not at all. I'm not saying that I know the White Sox were cheating. I can just tell you that other teams were probably using as much technology as they had once the center field camera started. And if the White Sox were one of them, I wouldn't be shocked.
Hmm. Bruce, we heard a lot from Javi Baez on Friday, and we heard a lot about his, wanting to stay and all the saying all the right things. Are the Cubs any closer, and are you viewing this as an either Javi or Chris Bryant equation the way it was sort of presented this weekend?
No, I don't see it that way. I don't see Bryant signing a long-term deal until he becomes a free agent. After talking to Javi and talking to Epstein when he asked about his contract, their eye contact kind of moved. And, that's not always a tell. But being a reporter for all these years like you guys have been, you read body language. So when you hear somebody on the phone as opposed to being in person with them, you read the body language. And the body language tells me that they're still trying very hard to get a deal done and that that they both want to get a deal done. And if that's the case, and if it's a $150 or $175 million deal for Javier Baez going forward, I think that's a very good sign for the team because, as Epstein said during the weekend, their focus is on 2020, but it's also way beyond 2021 when all these contracts end, when Epstein's contract ends. So I think getting Baez, who's arguably top five player in Major League Baseball right now, signed, I think that's a very big deal for them. And hopefully Baez is one that wants to get it done, and here's the right number.
It's fascinating, Bruce, because I think that the idea of trading Chris Bryant is obviously connected to the grievance, and the grievance is almost used as an excuse for not spending money. Understandably so. If you were to go out and spend a ton of money and then the grievance comes through and you're trying to move a guy, you're not doing it out of a position of strength. Everybody knows you want to get below the luxury tax. That being said, when will this finally hit? Have you heard anything about this grievance? When can they get their offseason started?
I was hearing rumblings that it would be done by Friday or early this week.
Right.
Obviously, it's now early this week, and it hasn't happened. Talking to Epstein and Hoyer, trying to get intel from them, they said they hope to hear from it soon, but they don't know. Certainly, it has impacted, at least from this vision right now of trying to move Bryant or keep Bryant or make other moves, it's really impacted their offseason because nobody knows where Chris Bryant is at this time point in time. The thinking is that it would be a huge upset if he wins the grievance. But nonetheless, you know, it's an independent arbiter who is hired by both Major League Baseball and the Players Association. So you never know what's going to happen there. But the unknown has impacted everybody, including Chris Bryant and his camp. It's been an unnerving offseason for him as well.
Bruce, I thought David Ross was terrific in the way he handled everything, sort of the uncertainty, and he certainly charmed the audience. One of the more interesting baseball aspects, though, we talked about the need for a leadoff hitter, and we've been talking about a leadoff hitter since Dexter Fowler left town. Nico Horner's name came up, and I wondered what you thought about that. We talked about that briefly on Saturday, but do you think he is a guy that could come in, have a good, strong spring training, and go into opening day as your leadoff hitter?
I guess he could. You know, I don't think that would be prudent. There's still people in the Cubs camp that, you know, and what I mean by Cubs camp, the front office, that are a little queasy about not sending him back to the minor leagues for a couple of months. You know, he only had, I think, 380 minor league at-bats. You know, that's not very much. And he showed extremely well at the major league level, handled himself beautifully, shown that he could hit the other way. But I think that's just too much to put on a young player, on a rookie player like that. That's just too much. Again, my opinion is if Chris Bryant is on this team, and David, you and I talked about it, if Chris Bryant's on this team, I think he's the leadoff hitter. I think he checks the most boxes of anybody outside of anybody else that they bring in right now. He's the guy you want to bring in because he has power, he has speed, he has on-base ability. So even though ideally Chris Bryant's looked at as a 3 or 4 hitter, he's been a number 2 hitter mostly for Joe Maddon. I think he could fill the bill as the leadoff hitter. But I'm in the minority. Will the Cubs think like I do? I think there's been some conversation about it.
Any idea where and when Nolan Arenado would be moved? And, you know, we heard all these rumors about the Cubs, rumors about the Cardinals. Is this thing on hold? Is it not going to happen? Is this just pie-in-the-sky stuff?
Well, Mike, what would you give up for a guy that has the same control as Bryant has? I mean, he is signed for the next 8 years, you know, and the average is about $35 million a year, and he is considered the top player at his position, maybe one of the best that's ever played there. But he can roll out of that thing in 2 years, just like Bryant is a free agent. He can opt out of his contract. And if he doesn't like the team he's going to, he can kill the deal because he has a complete no trade. That really hinders you when you're trying to trade somebody because you have to really run it by the player and say, number one, will you go to blank? Will you go to Philadelphia? Will you go to Washington? So he has to be a part of the trade process. What do you get back for what do you give if you're an organization that has tremendous young talent but might only have a 2-year buy-in for 3-4 guys that you might have to deal? I think it's a very difficult trade to be made. So I don't know if that happens or not.
Yeah, I don't think he's coming here, but the Cardinals would be a problem.
Be a big problem.
Yeah,
it would be. And they have the young talent to get an Arenado because they are flush with young pitching, right, and they could have plenty of young pitching left for themselves if indeed they make that trade.
Bruce, thanks a ton. Always a joy.
Thank you, Bruce.
All right, guys. Take care.
All right, football fans, the NFL draft is almost here, and the Free Odyssey app brings you the latest coverage from the biggest sports radio stations across the country. Which players will help your team the most? Who will make a draft day trade? Will they be ready for week one? The local conversations about the team you love. All streaming free right here on the Odyssey app. AUDACY. Download it today.